Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we are broadcast on the radio Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at those times at richarddugan.com. And we are then posting the podcasts, both at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, but also on SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify. We're now on Spotify, Switcher. If I get any more, I'm not going to remember them all, and I'll have to have a printed list in front of me. But nonetheless, you know, we're expanding our reach as far as the podcasts are concerned. 2018 is nearly complete. 2019 is growing as we speak, and we encourage you to go to those various links. Now, if you want to go back to 2017 and earlier, the first 10 years of this broadcast, you will need to go to the radio show's page. The process of converting those and uploading those to the podcasts, it's going to take some time, folks. You're talking 10 years of programs, 52 programs in a year. You do the math. So, and I'm a one-man band, and I only play one instrument. So, so there you go. We also encourage you to go to our guests' website. We will be linked to them both at the radio show's page as well as SoundCloud. Now, the interesting thing with SoundCloud is when you go to the player and you start listening, you're going to see a little grocery cart. That grocery cart is a link to our guest's website, interestingly enough, because you know, we're not charging at this point for the access to these programs. But you can do that. And so click on that grocery cart and boom, you're going to go to our guest's website, like today's guest. Also, if you'd like to help support this radio broadcast, we are always grateful, very appreciative if you are able to do so. Please send all cards and letters and so forth. We have a PayPal account that's set up on the homepage as well as the missions page. If this is the first time you've listened to this program, go to the missions page during or after this interview and see and read about what we're doing here. And if you like it, if it resonates with you, if you're of like mind and you'd like to support what we're doing, hey, we're open to that. We are not nonprofit. Don't want to get in trouble with the IRS. So the support is not tax deductible. But what it does do is keep us moving forward. And again, I'm gratefully appreciative of that. I'm also gratefully appreciative of Rebecca Whitman, who's my guest today. We're going to be talking about how to make $567 trillion in 7 minutes by playing the wheel at Las Vegas. Or better yet, how to make six-figure income working part-time. Rebecca, it's great to have you here on the program. Sorry about that. I couldn't resist.
Hi.
I could not resist.
Well, that was funny. Yeah, I don't know. It's great to be here, Richard. I'm so excited to talk to you about my book. And I don't know about the $567 trillion, if I can help your listeners with that. But I can definitely help them make a six-figure income working part-time.
Well, they do say that our national debt's heading in that direction unless we do something about it. But that's another subject for another time and a whole other genre. But what we're trying to do is help people. And in our world, in this reality, we need money. We need currency. We need some form of exchange in order to A, just survive, putting food on the table, gas in the car, clothes on your back, roof over your head. But then when you talk about six figures, I'm sitting here thinking, you know what? And I will tell you this. In one of my interviews not too long ago, I was sharing this little dream. Now, it was not a very long dream. It's actually more audible. And it was one word, 800,000. And I thought, you know, $800,000? I could work with that. I could take care of my all of my debts would be paid. I would be able to support the two charities that I feel very strongly about and still have more than enough to do the things that my wife and I want to do. And so I'm sitting here thinking, you know, 800,000, that ain't bad. Now, 8 million, I can live with that too. 800 million, you know, you're starting to... See, to me, I don't know when enough is enough. And so you're starting out with six figures and working part-time. But you're also talking about putting this in the context of a spiritual or metaphysical reality. And I know that a lot of people hear this phrase. I'm sure you've heard it too. And that is, if you just do what you love, the money will come. Is that true, false, or what is your explanation of that phrase? How should we be approaching that when talking about working part-time for six-figure income, which I think is great?
Well, wow, you said a lot. So yeah, there's a saying, do what you love and the money will follow. And you do have to get passionate and excited about doing what you love. But if it's something that has no income potential, you know, if you love, you know, being a server at a restaurant because you love food and you love talking to people, you probably won't make a six-figure income doing that. You need to make a six-figure income in something more entrepreneurial or all commission sales or network marketing. And I talk about that in the book. But everyone in your listening community needs work-life balance. And what I do in the book is I divide life into seven areas: your spiritual life, your fitness, emotional, romantic, mental, social, and finally financial. And I say in the book that the finance portion of your life is the last piece of the puzzle to come into practice.
Okay. Now I've been doing what I've been doing for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I got into this business when I was 19, but I began my metaphysical search when I was 17.
Cool.
And one of the phrases that was often, and I was greatly appreciative, I'm more so now than then, of the phrase or the comment that was made to me, said, Richard, you know, because I was interviewing then, you're wise beyond your years. And I was thankful. Thank you very much. But then I thought, okay, but as I get older, will my wisdom still keep a pace ahead of my age? In other words, I'm 58 now. So am I still wise beyond my years? Maybe they balance out after a while. But one of the things that I thought was so interesting was the fact that I had people around me I was working full time. And I was hiring people because I was the operations manager for a station, and people would come in and they say, and I would ask them to do certain tests. They say, well, you don't pay me enough to do that. And it's like, that was part of the job description. And then I remember a news story about Motorola. This was in the mid 80s. They were laying off like 1,000 people. And you know the reason why? It was because the people, apparently they had done an inventory and $1 million worth of materials and merchandise. It just disappeared. And most likely, some of those 1,000 probably were the pilferers who had that same attitude. You don't pay me enough.
And what can you give? And even if you're in the worst, most menial job ever, some of the wealthiest people that we know started off in menial jobs. I mean, I was just talking to someone the other night at dinner, and he was telling me that Ralph Lauren, who's now like a fashion tycoon, he used to come to his father's store in Manhattan, New York, and try to sell ties. So everybody has to start somewhere. And I think it's all about being of service and coming from contribution.
Now, you mentioned one area that I have worked in, and that's multi-level marketing. But I was on the inside. I was working for the company. And then I also worked for another company when I moved to Santa Barbara. It was called Bargain Network. Doesn't exist here anymore. As far as I know, it's not anywhere. But what they did was they provided a monthly subscription for this booklet that they would send out for people who were looking to buy used cars. Mm-hmm. And then they expanded that to another booklet for people who were buying homes. And here's the real irony, and help me to understand this, because I know there are other people that are probably feeling the same way. By the end of the, I'm going to say 7, 8, maybe 9 months that I was working that job, I hated it. It was for me a stepping stone. I obviously needed the income until I could get into a radio job. And the real irony was that in the last 3 weeks of my employ, I was doing so well on sales that there was this special booth that they put special salespeople in. They served them lunch every day. They gave them special perks because their sales were at a certain level, right? And I was in there the last 3 weeks of my tenure there. And I was that good, and I hated it that much. And my father said to me when I shared this with him, he says, Richard, I don't know what your problem is. You could sell ice cubes to Eskimos. So what about that? If somebody's doing a job that, strangely enough, they're really good at, but they really wish they were doing something else that they loved to do, that may, I don't know, maybe they weren't as good at. Maybe that's the dichotomy.
Right. Well, I mean, we all have our strengths and our skill sets, and you're obviously a great communicator and a great salesman. That's why you've had such a long career in radio. So I would say don't quit that job, because you still have to pay your bills and feed your family, and you have responsibilities. But find what I call your passion project or side hustle, something that you are excited about. And if you have your week structured, how I talk about in the book, you have to structure your time. Time is the biggest resource we have. We can make or lose money. It comes and goes. You can make a fortune, you can lose a fortune, you can make a fortune, but time is the only resource that we'll never give back, that we'll never get back, because we're only on this earth for a limited amount of time. So you need to structure your week. And so, you know, this many hours, let's say 35 hours is the job I hate that I'm good at. And then I'm going to make 10 hours a week to work on my passion project, whether that be an entrepreneurial opportunity, network marketing, a home-based business, something that you can get excited about. And that excitement and that fire that you have for your side hustle is going to spill into your regular workday, because, you know, I'm not really here forever. I'm just here until I can make enough money with what I really want to do.
Mm-hmm. And this actually brings up another point. But before we get to that, I want to let our listeners know, of course, we're talking with Rebecca Whitman, and we're talking about her latest work, which, of course, is available at her website, RebeccaElizabethWhitman.com. The title of the book is How to Make a Six-Figure Income Working Part-Time. I don't know if you're familiar with this comedian's stand-up back in the 70s, but Steve Martin had a wonderful a bit where he talked about how he had written this book and he wanted to share the concepts and so forth. He wrote a book called How to Make $1 Million. First, get $1 Million. Then, and that's where the joke ended. And I've always heard this too, and help me to I'll have you explain this as well. Even especially when, let's say you're an observer of the economy, you know, listen to the stock reports, you listen to the reports every month and so forth, unemployment, etc. And I've heard it said that on a metaphysical level, a spiritual level, when the economy is not expanding, it contracting, when it's contracting, you expand. Now, that doesn't mean you get a bunch of credit cards and go nuts, but you don't contract at the same time that the universe is, or the economy is contracting. Well, of course, the converse isn't necessarily true, though. When it's expanding, yeah, then you have a greater opportunity for expansion. Is that a fair way to look at it as an individual who's trying to do this? That, say, 2008, 2009, that was the time for individuals to start stepping out and doing stuff, experimenting?
I think if you're on a spiritual path and you understand that your thoughts manifest your reality, you can be immune to the economy in certain ways. Like, a lot of people were very affected, and it was a terrible tragedy. And I was affected too. Of course, I'm a homeowner and I had to do a loan modification and stuff like that. But I didn't really feel the pinch personally as far as my income flow, as far as my sales job, because I didn't let myself buy into the hysteria and the hype. And I just kept my, you know, my mind focused on what I wanted to manifest, and that I was abundant and healthy and living a great life. And it didn't affect me on a personal level so much. And I really think that if you are an entrepreneur, or if you are in all commission sales, and you have your goals, and people always need stuff, and people will spend every dime they make, whether they make $10,000 a month or $100 a month, because we're in a consumeristic society. So I just feel like you can be immune to it if you employ these metaphysical principles that I talk about in the book.
You also talk about how there's a new currency, and it's a metaphor, mm-hmm. That you talk about in the book, And it has to do with this new currency we might call happy currency.
Absolutely.
What is, I bring this up every time this word comes up. In our Declaration of Independence, it talks about these inalienable rights of life, liberty. We get those, right?
Yes.
But I don't know what was on the minds of the founding fathers. We don't get happiness. We can pursue it, but we don't get it. First of all, I think we do get it, but we do have to pursue it, and we can achieve it. But it's something that obviously it's an ebb and flow. But talk to me about your definition of what happy is or happiness is.
Right. Well, I have a joke, you know. It took a lot of suffering for me to get this happy. So I have been on a spiritual path for almost 30 years, and I've studied some great teachers like Michael Beckwith, Abraham Hicks, Wayne Dyer, Marianne Williamson, just to name a few. And they really talk about happiness as something that comes from the inside. And we're in a society that tells you that you need to get more stuff to be happy. I need to get that car, get that house, go on that vacation, get that good looking spouse on my arm. And it's like an if then equation. If I can get this, then I'll be happy. And it keeps putting happiness in the future. And we're like the little mule chasing the carrot. We never get there. So how I have been happy is I just decide, and it's a decision, that I'm going to be happy before I get all that outside stuff. And then whether the stuff comes or not, I've already decided to be happy.
Hmm. I am a great observer, and I'm watching some of these documentaries, these news stories as well, of the various small villages and tribes in Africa. And these people, they don't have, you know, next to nothing. And yet the clothes that they're wearing are so vibrant in color. So alive, and even they are smiling in most cases, right? I mean, you've seen these pictures, you've seen these stories, and I sit here going, what have they got that we don't, and we've got all this stuff, and they don't.
Well, there's a lot of cultures, especially in the third world, that they don't have anything. They don't have indoor plumbing, they don't have electricity. You know, they're just, you know, barely surviving day by day, but they have happiness. They have their community and their family and their culture and their rituals. And it's so ironic that we're in the first world and we have all our stuff and our technology and our gadgets, and people are more lonely and isolated than ever. People are staying home and they're not connecting. They're watching Netflix, or they're connecting via their cell phone. But we're really a lonely, isolated culture. So I think simplicity and community is why these other cultures, they're genuinely happy, and they don't have such high expectations. They just are more living a simple life in the moment.
Yeah, I just find that so fascinating, and yet we are. This to me is a real paradox, because we have all this stuff, and we end up getting so much that we end up paying someone else a monthly fee on rent to store it somewhere else. You know,
it's crazy.
It's that old Stephen Wright joke. If you had everything, where would you put it?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it goes back to like Thoreau and Emerson and some of the existentialist writers, you know, in early American literature, where it's all about simplicity. Simplicity is the key to happiness.
You talk about this concept from a spiritual, physical, emotional, romantic, mental, social, as well as a financial perspective. And we've touched upon the spiritual aspect. Where is that the place that we want to start in regards to this? Because right there in your introduction, you talk about these three questions, simple questions that you want to ask yourself. And it seems to me like, yes, the question, what do I want? Does that need to be tied into our self-discovery of what our life's purpose is? Because as you're familiar, I'm sure, with the law of attraction, you know, the secret and everything.
Mm-hmm.
One of the elements that we've talked about on this program has to do with, just because you want it say on an ego level, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be for your higher good or your best interest. The universe might still give it to you, but, you know, it could be a hindrance to, you know, what it is that you are really here to do. And again, I know it's all about choices and what have you, but what about that in terms of that first question, what do I want, and my life's purpose?
Well, you got to find your why. Like, why are you getting out of bed every morning? You know, are you taking care of a child? Are you taking care of a parent? Do you want to be famous? Do you want to make a ton of money? You got to know why you're doing what you're doing to get excited. And usually it's not just, I want to make a ton of money. It's, I want to make money so that I can, you know, travel the world and write. Or you got to dig deep and find your why. And as far as your purpose, you got to ask yourself three questions. What am I good at? What do I like to do for fun? And what makes me mad? And those can help you figure out what is exciting to you in life. Like for you, what am I good at? Well, you're good at sales, but that doesn't really, that's not fun for you.
That
right?
answers both the first and the third question.
Yeah. So, as far as what makes you mad, you know, maybe you don't like the way they're doing animal testing, or that's a passion for you that you want to, something that maybe your life purpose is to, you know, be in animal rights, or maybe you don't like, you know, how they're treating humans, get into a human rights activist. So, but back to the first question here, that kind of ties in, what do you want? Like, what do you want in life? Maybe you're in a job that you hate. It's 9 to 5. It's 40 hours. You hate your boss. You hate your coworkers. You hate your commute. Well, you know what you hate, but what do you want out of life? You have to see where you're going if you're going to get there. We have to know that we're going to take a road trip to New York if we're going to ever get to New York. So you got to know, what do you want out of life? Do you want more freedom? Do you want travel? Do you want romance? Do you want to be a creative artist? So that's the first question. How do I feel in my current circumstances? So going back to this analogy of the job I don't like, well, I don't feel appreciated. I don't feel loved. I don't feel seen. I don't feel like I'm getting paid what I'm worth. You have to be aware of how you're feeling. And then the third question is, what action is needed, if any, to get what I want? So many people just stay stuck in like the hamster and the hamster wheel, and all they do is complain about their job. But unless they're willing to take action to make steps to get out of their job, they're going to be stuck there for the next 40 years. So that's why it's important to come up with a side project or another business opportunity that can eventually get you out of your current job.
You know, my father told me early on, I think it was even before I got into radio, he says, find a job you really love doing because you're going to be doing it for a long time. Don't get stuck like I did. Now, he didn't really get stuck. At the time he was telling me this, maybe he felt that way, but he went to junior college, got his computer programming degree, and he continued on in his career before his retirement. So you're absolutely right. We need to find something that we really love doing and what we have fun at doing. And I have fun doing this. This is great. I would love to be doing specifically interviewing and talking with people such as yourself and gleaning information and sharing that with the listeners, on a full-time basis. And I know that that's going to come one day too. But as I mentioned, my father, I'm curious as to the relationship you had with your father and how much advice he gave you. And I also know, too, that, you know, you've dedicated this book to him.
Yes, I did. Actually, my father was a huge example of success, but it was an example that I couldn't ever live up to. My dad was like a boy genius. He graduated from high school at 15, college at 18, medical school at 20. He had to wait a whole year before he could practice medicine because you had to be 21 to get a medical license. So, and he worked extremely, extremely hard. And I looked at that example and he didn't seem to be having any fun. I mean, yes, he did, you know, have hobbies. He played tennis and poker, but he had a lot of stress in his life and he wasn't having fun. And kind of as a little kid, I just made a decision that I want to be successful like my dad, but I want to enjoy life more and I want to have more fun. So he kind of showed me his version of success. And then I kind of said, I think I'm going to define my own version of success. And why I dedicated the book to him is because he was literally on his deathbed. And he said, hey, Rebecca, why don't you write something? I don't care what it is. It could be an article in a magazine, a book, a blog. He said, you've always been such a good writer. Just write something and get it published. And I wrote this book to honor his request.
Well, that's very cool. And not only is the book available at Amazon, but also, of course, through RebeccaElizabethWhitman.com. It's also, I love this, it's also available as an audiobook. One of the side projects that I have fun doing is creating audiobooks, producing them.
And nice.
So people who, such as yourself, who have done so, that to me is a real boon because they get to listen to all of this stuff and they can listen to it over and over and over again in the car or anyplace else where they can't really hold a book. But at the same time, that book is always a nice feel in the hands and it's something tangible. It's not a really, folks, it's not an expensive thing. I mean, it's under $10 for either. And I would go to Amazon.com and look up how to make a six-figure income working part-time. And I'm curious as to the other elements that you talk about. As far as these are actually the chapter headings. Obviously, when you made reference to that third question is what action, if any, has to be taken, that would be the physical element, chapter two. I find this interesting, though. You've included a romantic chapter. Tell us how that applies to this.
Well, I think romance and finance are very connected, and it has to do with your self-worth and your self-love. And if you have a partner that's not treating you well, that's not supportive, that is actually criticizing you or giving you a hard time in life, you can apply that to a boss that gives you the same type of treatment. I mean, I've had bosses that have been verbally abusive and rude and not supportive, as well as romantic partners. And I feel like once you get these areas in order, romance first, and you feel self-love, you can attract a partner that gives you love. And it took me a long time and a lot of heartbreak, but now I'm finally in a healthy relationship where somebody treats me the way that I want to be treated. And I've been going out with my boyfriend now for about 6 months. And in the beginning of the book, I talk about how my dad had recently passed. I had recently come through a divorce, but I was still feeling happy because I was choosing to be happy and I was focusing on these principles of self-love and contribution and everything that I talk about in the book. But I think romance and finance are completely interconnected.
It makes me think of planning a trip. And in spite of everything that you do, you know where you're going, you know the destination, but you have no idea what you're going to come across. As opposed to the routine of going to and from a brick and mortar work location, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you jump out on the highway there and you point your car in that direction, or you jump on a plane or train or what have you. And who knows who you're going to come across, what experiences you're going to have, what weather conditions, and so on and so on and so on. And so it sounds to me like with those, major changes and challenges in your life, that was kind of like where you were at. This could be an adventure, and to me, in spite of the sadness and grieving and so forth, both of the loss of your father as well as of the marriage, I've been through one myself, and it's no fun. But you put so much time and energy and effort, and in one sense, you have nothing to show for it, but you do because we all learn from those things. So this is very interesting as far as the romantic aspect of it too. I find that very, very fascinating. Now, chapter seven, I love the fact that you made financial chapter seven because that's the number I choose every time I'm rolling the dice in Vegas. Give me seven. In terms of our attitude towards, specifically towards money, you know, we could say wealth, we could say prosperity, we could say abundance. There are a lot of different words. Do all of those speak the same to you, or do those each one have a different, for you, a vibration, an energy, an intent, a different intent? And are there specific words maybe that we should be focusing on when speaking about what it is that we want in our bank account and so forth and so on?
Well, I don't have any negative connotations with any words. Some people do have negative connotations with money, like money is the root of all evil and, you know, money grubbing people. And mm-hmm. I think kind of like the word God, you know, people have their own perception of it and it's not always positive. So I like to use the word abundance because it applies to having plenty of money, but also just abundance is health, it's vitality, it's happiness, it's just coming from contribution. So I do like the word abundance. I like the word wealth, and I like to say in the book that health is the new wealth, because if you have your health, you can make anything. But if you could have all the money in the world, and if you don't have your health, you know, what is it worth? So yeah, I like the word abundance the best.
I think that's a good one. I think it really is. I know I've heard those phrases as well. I'm curious as to also how your outlook, if you will, on abundance was shaped, say, from your childhood and the philosophy, or in this case, the religion that you grew up in. How did that help or hinder how you have developed to this day as far as now making this book available and all this wonderful information on your website?
Well, I grew up in an upper middle class Jewish background. It wasn't religion. It was more of a culture. And the culture said you either become a doctor or a lawyer or you marry a doctor or a lawyer. And because I didn't do either, you know, I felt kind of like a failure in the eyes of the culture that I grew up in. So I was like, well, I am going to create my own paradigm of what success is. And that is having a joyous, happy, abundant life. And it's got nothing to do with what other people think of me. What matters to me is what I think about me and what God thinks about me. So I think that made me fiercely independent, and it made me want to go out in the world and figure out what I wanted to do to become successful in my own eyes instead of in other people's eyes.
Mm. Well, you have a section in here. You go through a list of statements that we all could make in reference to what I am not. And then you follow that up with what I am. And I am what I am. And
it is a very short book. Mm-hmm. It's only about, how many pages is it? It's only about 80 pages.
Yeah.
But the people that I've shared it with go back and they read it over and over and over and over again, and they study it. So let's say out of the seven areas, someone wants to work on their social life. They would just study that chapter. Every chapter has tools and techniques and tips to shift yourself. It's kind of like hitting a golf ball. You could change your swing, you know, a quarter of an inch, and then it would have, you know, 20, 30 feet difference in the result. So that's kind of what the book has. It's got tools and tips. And my friend who is a psychologist, she actually has her group therapy clients stand up and say an affirmation from an area that they're working on. So every chapter ends with three affirmations. So for example, if you wanted to work on your social life, these are the three affirmations at the end of the chapter. I am surrounded by people who love and support me. I have fun and play with people who lift me up. I am able to spend time with people who are positive and abundant.
Hmm. And you just kind of repeat those. What about, have you received, I'm sure, as you've said already, you've received a lot of wonderful comments and compliments on the book, and people are using it, they're working it, and so forth. But, you know, when I look at some of these affirmations, and again, I'm just playing the devil's advocate here.
Sure.
You get blowback from people saying, oh, come on, it's just a bunch of platitudes. This doesn't work. This is never going to work for me. This is just my lot in life. This is my destiny because of maybe karma, and so on and so forth?
Well, I think that affirmations don't work if you're not already in a good space. Like if I say this affirmation, I am reading or listening to something that inspires me every day. It's like, that's not really going to lift you up and lift your vibration and work. So if you're really down and depressed and you say affirmations, I don't think they're going to work. So you have to find other ways to lift your spirits, whether that's through exercise, you know, taking a hot bath, a walk, different things, reading. But I think if you are in a good mind space already and you're relatively happy, I do think that affirmations work because I've experienced these affirmations in my own life. So that's, I'm only sharing what works for me. You know, I'm not a social scientist or an expert in anybody's life except my own. And I just talk about in the book from my own perspective how I have been able to make a six-figure income working part-time for the last 12 years. And these are the affirmations that have helped me.
So to that, talk to us about your perspective on a phrase we use quite often on this program, that words have power.
Yes. Oh, my God. You know, people are so careful with their diet and the clothes that they choose and all the different choices going through your Amazon. And, you know, speaking of Amazon, I got 19 five-star reviews. So, but they'll go to Amazon and they'll read all the reviews and they'll go to Consumer Reports and they'll research before they buy something. But your words, we choose our own words, have so much power. Your words are like an advertisement that you send out to the boundaries of the universe, and they reverberate back to you as life experience like a boomerang. And we get to choose our words. And it's a practice and it's a habit and it's a mental discipline. But once you get used to it, you can actually choose your words to come out in a more positive way.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Rebecca Whitman. We're talking about her latest work that she is talking here with us about, how to make a six-figure income working part-time, available at RebeccaElizabethWhitman.com. The book is available. Audiobook is also available through Amazon.com. We encourage you to go there and check it out, and we will be linked to that website as well. We will also be coming back in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We'll be right back.
Stories, I'll do my best to understand me.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for staying with us here on the program as we continue talking with our very special guest here on the program, Rebecca Whitman. And we're talking, of course, as I've mentioned, how to make a six-figure income working part-time. The website is RebeccaElizabethWhitman.com. And it's real interesting, too, how, I don't know about you, Rebecca, but I, in my early stages of my metaphysical life, you know, I sought out intuitives, you know, psychics and so forth. And I was always asking about, you know, the next relationship, the next job, you know, money, where I was going to live. And at the time, I had just moved out of my parents' house and so forth at 21. And it was like these were always the questions. And now here I am at 58, and those questions, even though I might still occasionally seek out one of these individuals, it isn't so much to get an answer. It is to confirm what I already know. To that end, can we talk a little bit about our own intuition, our own connection to the divine, if you will, in guiding us through this path, to be able, see, because I love what you said at the beginning, if we could generate a six-figure income and working part-time, we have that in the bank account. And I've thought about this many times. In addition to taking care of my debt and so on and so forth, I would be able to, you know, really help some people who really, when my best friend called me from Phoenix, I mean, I'm thinking 8 or 9 years ago, he was living in his car. We went to school together, and there was nothing I could help him financially. All I could do was give him some advice, which I guess worked because now he's doing great. I mean, I don't take credit for that because he had to do the work. But I would have been able to say, hey, you know what? I'll send you, you know, 100, $500 to help get you going and so on and so forth. Charities, whatever the case might be in terms of being of service to my community that I've created over the years. Talk about how your intuition has guided you through this process.
Exactly. Well, when I sat down to write, I didn't even know how the book was going to come out, what it was going to be like. And so I just followed the intuition that my dad said he wanted me to write. And I didn't self-criticize. You know, I'm a recovering perfectionist. And I think perfectionism is the thief of joy, because if you try to make everything perfect, you can't have your process. So I was like, I wrote the outline and I wrote the book, and I'm like, it might not be a perfect book, but it's what I wrote and it's my experience. So that was following the intuition of, you know, my dad telling me just write something. But I believe that if you're open to it, you get intuition everywhere. Like, I never know who God is going to use to give me my next indicated action. It could be a song on the radio. It could be overhearing a conversation in line at the grocery store. It could be a magazine article that I read on the plane. I just never know. And so I'm excited because I know that the universe or God, whatever that is for you, your higher power, it speaks through other people. And I'm excited to find out what it's going to tell me today. So I'm very open to it. And I have a really dear friend, and she is absolutely sure that God speaks to her through vanity license plates. So when she's driving, she's, you know, her eyes are focused, you know, on the car in front of her trying to read their vanity license plates. And that's how she gets her intuitive hits.
I love that. I love that. I knew when I was working for a station back in Phoenix, and I was producing from our end the commercial breaks for the network feed. It was the Larry King Show, and from Mutual Broadcasting Network. And he would get a regular caller who loved to talk to him about baseball, which Larry loved. But this guy, he was using the baseball scores to prove that God exists, that God is real, and so forth. And of course, Larry kept asking him, I says, well, okay, well, that's great, but if that's the case, why don't you tell me what the score is going to be for tonight's game? You know, and he would never do that because it wasn't about that, but it was just kind of a funny twist on that. I have to say that I use the appearance of certain animals, but I've shied away from going to my phone or to computer and saying, hey, Google, what does it mean when a deer crosses my path? I've stayed away from that and tried to go within and saying, okay, higher self, what does it mean when this deer is what does it mean when a deer crosses my path? And I've found that true also we've had a dream expert, if you will, who was on this program, and she does not interpret someone's dreams for them. She has key questions about their dream that she asks them. And it leaves it up to the individual. It's like,
well, I agree. I believe that all the answers are within, and whether you go to a psychic or a clairvoyant, we're all tapped into the same source. We're all waves on the same ocean. And I believe we do have the answers within, and sometimes we need someone to confirm that, but we know what we need to do to get on, you know, to go down our spiritual path and what our next step is.
So what is your next step? You've written this book, it's out there. I have to say, I think it's fantastic that it's also audible. But what is the next step for you?
Well, I gave my first seminar this past fall called The 7 Steps to Success. So I plan to do more seminars. I plan to do personal one-to-one coaching. If people want to, you know, contact me about that, my email is RebeccaElizabethWhitman@gmail.com. I plan to, you know, I wanted to write a follow-up book, and I asked people out of these 7 areas, which do you want to learn the most about? And they all said romantic. So I am tossing around the idea of writing another book about dating and romance, because that's what the readers say they want to learn more about.
What about in making this available for kids? What about teaching children? Because this is geared towards adults who already have been programmed by the media and marketing and institutions of all various types about what money is, what it isn't, what you can and can't have, et cetera, et cetera. And what about training kids up early before they're inundated with this stuff?
That is a brilliant idea. You know, in school, we learn math, science, English, and history, and then we graduate and we have to learn how to pay our bills and get into a healthy relationship. And we don't learn anything about that in school, about money or relationships. And I think that would be great. That's a great idea to come up with a program for kids.
Yeah. And bear in mind, allegedly, we learn those things you listed there.
Yeah, exactly.
I often find that our education is lacking, that also gets in our way when it comes to being able to consider these possibilities. That's what we bring it up almost every program, that without an education, how do you know what choices you have?
That's true. That is so true. I mean, education, you know, it's great. I went to Princeton University. I'm very grateful that I have a college degree. But, you know, when you think about it, education programs you to be an employee. When we go to school, we get up early. We go to school from 8 to 3. We get out. We wait in lines. We wait our turn. We're told, you know, if we get good grades, we're going to have a good job. If we don't get good grades, we're going to end up working for the people who do have the good grades. And that leads to having an employee mentality. And what happens is you end up working 40 years and then they throw you a retirement party with a cake. And if you're lucky, you get a gold watch and a pension plan. But it's all based on the paradigm of school.
Yeah. I'm curious as to what higher learning you have experienced, let's just say since the 12th grade, because that's pretty much where the mandatory attendance ends, and then it becomes your choice as to where to go. You mentioned Princeton. What about since then? What other areas have you chosen to study that have influenced you?
Well, I was in network marketing for 6 years, and the company that I was involved in is no longer in business. But one of the things that they really encouraged was for you to go to a training at least once a week. And this was a whole weekend seminar, 10 hours on Saturday, 10 hours on Sunday. And all they talked about was the sales psychology and the psychology of wealth. And I really believe that that training that I got through that network marketing company is a huge part of my success today. And I literally studied sales and wealth principles the same way people would get a master's degree in business or law or medicine.
Would you say that that's what we're always doing, whether it's in our workplace or elsewhere? Every place we go, we are, in a manner of speaking, we're always selling?
I agree with you totally. Sales is happening in every conversation. Sales is just convincing someone that your point of view is right. Mm-hmm. And people do it all the time, whether they're debating a movie or a TV show or their favorite sports team, politics. Sales is just being convinced that your point of view is right.
Is it still sales if you are sharing your point of view and the other person says, you know, I understand what you're saying, but I don't agree? I mean, is it about understanding and not so much about turning someone in a different direction?
Oh, are you saying from the perspective of the other person saying, I understand, but I don't agree?
Exactly. In other words,
They are in sales because they're convincing the other person that they don't agree and mm-hmm. that their point of view will not be moved. So yeah, I really believe that every conversation is sales. And another thing that we all do is we love sharing ideas, concepts, movies, books, hopefully your readers will get my book and they'll share it with their friends, How to Make a Six-Figure Income Part-Time. But just sharing something that we've experienced is sales.
Now, I ask this next question because it's going to determine whether or not I ask you a particular question at the after the interview is over.
Okay.
Going to hit you up for a loan. Have you made a six-figure income?
Yes. That's what I said for the last 12 years.
Now, I was thinking about that $800,000 that I mentioned earlier in the program.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when I'm just standing around, I'm looking out to our porch at the mountains and the maybe the deer that are in the foreground, which we do have on our property. And I say to myself, I have it right now. How does that feel? How does that feel to have that money, that six figures in the bank account? You know, and I imagine it and it feels pretty good. It doesn't solve all my problems. I acknowledge that. But it sure feels pretty good. It lightens the load a little bit. But again, it's just numbers on a screen on my phone. And I guess one of the biggest fears, and I'd like for you to address this, one of the biggest fears in acquiring that kind of wealth, that kind of abundance, if you will, is, you know, the old the lottery scenario. That a person who's not financially well off wins the lottery of a million or we're punching a billion now.
Yeah.
And 1 year later, they're right back where they started. What went wrong?
Well, that's why in the book, I talk about seven areas of your life. It's not just about the money. So let's say that you win the lottery and by luck or fortune, you manifest, you know, tremendous wealth. But if you're not spiritually fit, physically fit, emotionally, romantically, mentally, and socially fit, you're not going to be able to hang on to that money because all these seven areas work in tandem.
Mm. And so we don't compartmentalize. They're all interwoven within one another. It's a tapestry, if you will.
Yes, and they're all connected to abundance. And to talk about what you were talking about before, you know, money, if you think about it abstractly, it's just paper and metal, or like you said, numbers on a screen. It's abstract, and we're the ones that give it so much meaning and weight. But what it does is that money gives you freedom. And I define freedom in the book as the ability to do what you want, when you want, where you want, and with who you want. And I think as human beings, we're all searching for more freedom.
Now, I know you said that your upbringing, your philosophical upbringing was Jewish, and what little I know about the various laws, the 613, I know that there was a financial law, I don't know if it was one of the laws or if it was just a principle that was set forth in the Old Testament, that said that every 7 years, all debts were wiped clean and you started over with a clean slate. Now that did not mean that you could go out and just, you know, go nuts. But what it meant is if you had a problem, okay. But in 7 years, we all start with a clean slate. If we were able to do something like that in our society, now I realize I don't have any clue as to what the economic repercussions of that would be. At least as far as the overall economy. But I do know that for some of us who struggle through from week to month to year and so forth and so on, that would be a boon. Again, you can't go out there, grab about 500 credit cards and just rack up the debt knowing that in 7 years it'll be gone. You have to be responsible. But you know, I would think that would relieve a lot of stress, a lot of heartache, a lot of, dis-ease in our society. Don't you think?
Well, it's funny that I've never heard of that law. So, you've studied my religion that I grew up with more than me, but seven is a real important number because, every 7 years, our whole body renews our whole DNA. So every 7 years on a cellular level, we're completely different people. And I have heard this. I'm not a credit expert. This is not my area of expertise, although my ex-husband did have tremendous credit card debt. So I learned about this from him. But he said that the negative reports on your credit only last 7 years. So, hey, you know, maybe there is something to that.
And to that end, there is something in our society that is not a 7-year plan, if you will, or a 7-year cycle. It's a 10-year, and it's called bankruptcy, chapter 7 and 11 and so on and so forth. What are your thoughts about people utilizing that to get out from under some of this mentally, emotionally, and spiritually crushing situation that maybe was, you know, nothing that they went out and racked up credit card debt, but hey, medical situations. I mean, we've got people across California who don't have a home. That's gone, and the car's gone, and I mean, all of this stuff, and yet the debt is still there. But what are your thoughts in regards to utilizing something that is part of our economic system? It's legal, and people do use it. Some again, through no fault of their own. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's great. And I think the only reason why people don't want to utilize bankruptcy is it's kind of admitting failure to themselves and failure to society or caring about what people think. But if they've gotten themselves in a situation where the debt is just impossible to pay off and it's hurting their feeling of happiness and freedom and they have the ability to file for bankruptcy, I'm all for it, and give yourself a clean slate and just start over and get the book and start building your life on these 7 areas and just give yourself a new beginning. So I'm all for self-forgiveness, and just, it's kind of like getting out of a bad relationship. You know, you learn your lessons, you forgive yourself, you forgive the other person, and then you just start over with a new chapter.
Yeah. I know that when it comes to relationships, and of course, you and I both, we've been divorced. I'm hoping that it's one and done.
Yes.
I never want to do it again. But one of the aspects is what I described earlier with, you know, what you went through with your divorce and, of course, the passing of your father. I'm going to take on a journey here, a new adventure, in new experiences. To the extent that I remember someone saying to me after my divorce, and I'm with this other woman who I'm still with to this day, 20 years later,
right.
They said, "Wow, you look like a different person." And the thought that came to me was, "Oh wow, I've been reincarnated in the same lifetime." You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it can release the stress. You know, maybe eliminate some of the health issues that one might be dealing with so that they can start anew and make some wiser choices by, of course, picking up a copy of the book, How to Make a Six-Figure Income Working Part-Time. Rebecca Whitman has been my guest here on the program, and I want to thank you so much for sharing so much time with us. This has just been fantastic, and I really do encourage people to invest. I think that would be a good way to put it, Rebecca, to invest in a copy, whether it be Audible or otherwise, so that you can get your financial house in order and then start doing some of the things that you really want to do. And we also don't know what the universe is going to throw at us. I was involved in early November of 2018. I was involved in a car accident. I wasn't hurt. The other driver wasn't hurt, but my car ended up being totaled. You know, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh. And then I got to thinking, well, okay, what opportunities could open up here for us? Because we've wanted to get a truck so that we could pull a travel trailer, so that we could travel, go camping and so forth. Maybe this is the opportunity. And so I guess changing one's attitude in that regard can really make all the difference in the world when things like this are thrown at you.
Yeah, I talk about going from victim to victor. You know, there's a lesson and a blessing in every situation. We just have to tune into it like you did with your car accident. I'm so glad you're okay. And I've so enjoyed our time together, Richard. It's been an honor and a privilege to talk to you.
Well, thank you. Again, a reminder, RebeccaElizabethWhitman.com. We will be linked to your website as well. And before we let you go, I have 3 final questions for you. And again, I thank you so much for giving us so much time here on the program. The first question, who is Rebecca Whitman?
Well, I am, I like to think of myself as the queen of fun and freedom, and my purpose in life is to share that fun and freedom with all who come into my path.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want to give people hope, inspire them, and give them the strength and the courage to go out and find joy and abundance in their lives.
And what is your life's purpose?
My life purpose is to give fun and freedom to all those who come into my path, whether it's by this show, by reading my book, staying in touch with me on social media. You can find me on Rebecca Whitman on Facebook, Rebecca E. Whitman on Twitter, and Rebecca E. Whitman on Instagram.
Absolutely fantastic. And Rebecca, thank you again for joining us. And you know, if you should find yourself here out on the South Coast, Santa Barbara area, love to have you in studio to talk more about this.
That would be fun. Santa Barbara is so beautiful. It would give me an excuse to go up there.
There you go. Well, again, Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you back in the near future.
Thank you so much. Take care.
You too. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.